I remember when I was studying theater at James Madison University, and you get a lot thrown at you as a student, as well, when you're learning anything, especially when it comes to the arts. You get thrown anecdotes, you get thrown pearls of wisdom, you have to process a lot, but then you have those lessons, nuggets of advice that stay with you, and then you suddenly realize, well, this applies to a lot of other stuff than just theater. And one of the things that was a takeaway for me, it was my theater mentor. I blogged about him shortly after his passing, and he gave me a piece of advice that has stayed with me since the times that I tread the boards, as you'll hear some stage actors say. It was, listen to your actors. Listen to your fellow actors around you. Now, what he meant by that was, when you're on stage, when you're doing a show, you have a script. You know what the other person is going to say. You know that. What you don't know is how they're going to say it. And really good actors, and I've worked with really good actors, and I've worked with some terrible actors, but the really good actors know that when they speak lines, they make the words their own. And it doesn't matter if it's Shakespeare. It doesn't matter if it's Simon. You make these words your own. And you have different inflections that you can give each of these lines. And really good actors never stop experimenting with that. They don't divert. They don't do something so crazy. And I've had this happen before, where actors will suddenly change an interpretation of a line while they're on stage. And that's not being edgy. That's not being avant-garde. That's not being unpredictable so that you can keep your fellow actors on your toes. That's being an asshole. That is. That's being a self-centered asshole. And I had zero tolerance for that when I was an actor. But then there are those actors that I've had the pleasure of working with that very subtly change the line. They don't change the interpretation, but they change the delivery. And based on that delivery, your reaction to it, even though you know what you're going to say, changes everything. And then you have to counter that, not necessarily with something, again, so over the top that it changes the interpretation of the line, because that's what rehearsals are for. Rehearsals are to get everything locked in step. And, you know, there is some room for variation. But that's what you do, whether it's film or whether it's stage or television. You know, you really have to listen to the other actor, because if they throw you something that you can work with, you don't just regurgitate the line. You react to it. And the same thing can be said about writing. And the same thing can be said about writing not just dialogue, but just setting a scene. When you are painting the landscape, you should really pay attention to what you're writing. It's probably one of the reasons why I'm a slow writer. I'm the first one to admit it. I'm a slow writer, not necessarily just for the fact that I sometimes can't get to a keyboard and I can't write or I can't freehand it. Man, I've stopped freehand writing in a long time ago. but as far as setting your scenes, I really pay attention to all the details and all the things around me. And I listen to what my characters have to say in the moment. Now, I'm a pantser. And if you're not familiar with the term, you've got planners and pantsers. And I have tried to, I've tried to outline. And I respect those folks who can outline a story from beginning to end. Throwback to the very first episode, one of the very first episodes that that I did for Dog Days was about writer's rage. It was the first. And I remember one of the things that kind of set me off, as Indiana Jim pointed out, was listening to a podcast that made me upset, and or an audiobook. And I remember that the author did say something in the book that made sense, but was not necessarily, you need to outline all your work and then your productivity will go up. But she said you should at least have two or three lines that says this has to happen in the chapter. And I agree. That's as far as I can go with planning. I know X, Y, and Z have to happen. But to really make that organic, to really make it feel true to itself, I listen very carefully to the narrative and I listen very carefully to my characters. And why that's important is that if your characters say something that just doesn't sound right, chances are it needs to be rewritten. If you've got a setting that doesn't feel right, there's a good possibility it needs to be rewritten. Now, whether you do that straight away or whether you wait until the second draft, that's up to you. And one of the things that I've started to do is listen to myself when I write. And what I mean by that is I want to keep pushing forward. I want to keep pushing forward with the writing, just as what I'm doing with Operation Endgame. And one of the things I've been doing now is I've been actually going into Scrivener and highlighting passages or highlighting words or highlighting names or whatever, and leaving breadcrumbs, leaving comments for myself. Because once upon a time, I was like, I'll fix it later. Once upon a time, that's what I said, I'll fix it later. And instead, I've started to make notes along the way, digital breadcrumbs, if you will, of what I need to change and what I was thinking at the moment. So when I go back and I look at what's already there and I go, what did I mean by that? I have a comment. I have a note that I can pull from. Sometimes I go, oh, I know what I wanted to do, and then I fix it. Other times I'll go, I have no idea what I meant. I have no idea what I meant by that. So what do I do? But at least I have that note to give me some type of focus, some type of direction, something that will help me figure out this is what needs to be fixed. I think it's important that when your characters are talking to each other, you listen very carefully to what they have to say. Are they dropping hints of what's to come? Do they say anything that is a throwback to an earlier book or an earlier episode? That's important. My wife and I, we've been doing a rewatch of Luther. We finally broke down and watched season 4, which is a whopping 2 episodes. Now, they're 2 longer than usual episodes, but they're still 2 episodes. Not enough Luther, in my opinion. But because of the rewatch of Luther, we decided, well, let's go back and because we watched season 4 of Luther, we said, let's go back and let's just rewatch everything. So we started watching Luther season 1. And I find it fascinating. Absolutely fascinating how many throwbacks in season 4 there are to season 1. It just little nods. Like there was a this won't surprise anybody if you know my wife. There was a terrific moment where Luther is talking to his partner about how he figured out something in a case. And he goes, well, why'd you do it this way? And he goes, this is how Bowie writes music, eh? And there's a great dialogue between the two of them about, you found a Bowie. And Idris Elba says, don't I look like a fan? And it's a great back and forth. But what's cool about that is that in Luther season 4, so this is literally 4 or 5 years after the original shooting of Luther. And Luther makes another music reference, and he says to his new partner, who is that beautiful redhead from Game of Thrones that hooks up with Jon Snow, and she says, you know nothing, Jon Snow. I'm blanking on her name. Feel free to drop me her name at 703-791-1701 or drop me an email at TiaTMorris.com. But he says he's going over his process, and he says to her, he says, this is how Bowie writes music. You like Bowie? And instead of asking if he's a fan or anything like that, she just kind of looks up at him and says, I like the movie he was in, you know, with the baby. And it's just, it's a darling little moment, but it's a really nice nod to season one. And that's what I mean by that's why I think Neil Cross, the guy who writes Luther, who created Luther, I really think that's what he does. He listens to his characters and he finds moments like that, which for your fans, those are gems. And for those people who just discover Luther in season four, they go back to season one and go, oh, hey, that's a nod to season four. And that's that. It's a circular thing, but it's something that we all do. We always make references, you know, in conversations to other, you know, it's being meta. And there's being meta, and then there's being meta to a point where it's obnoxious. Now, if you want to see where that line is, where someone dances up to that line of obnoxious meta, but then pulls it back and tells a great story, I'm going to throw this book out for you, Red Shirts by John Scalzi. I love that book. I absolutely love that book. Everybody's stoked about Ready Player One, but I really wish somebody would turn Red Shirts into a movie. Because one, it'd be funny as hell. It would probably be the funniest movie since Galaxy Quest. It would play a lot like the Orville, which I'm dying to see. But it's that ability to tie in something that's happened earlier, and then you come back to it. That only happens when you really pay attention to your characters and pay attention to the narrative. So listen to your setting, listen to your storytelling, listen to your characters. They have a lot to say to you. Welcome to the Dog Days of Podcasting.